Italian Wine Podcast. Cin cin with Italian wine people.
This is Italian Wine Podcast. I'm Stevie Kim, filling in for Monty Walden, the real host of Italian Wine Podcast. I'm the fake podcaster host. And this is the second part, the conversation with Natalie Wang, talking about the China's wine market. So welcome back, everybody. This is part two. So let's start with where we left off about social media in China. What is the main difference, quickly, between Chinese social media and Western social media as we know it?
Well, first of all, I think we talked about it in the first part as well. Western social media like Facebook, Instagram, Google, everything else was blocked, are blocked in China. And the huge difference is that the Chinese media is basically engineered and designed in a way for Chinese speakers. I mean, that's one obvious difference. And the penetration of it, it's just so widely penetrated in the market and widely used. And it's not just a singular app for messaging or a singular app for video or a singular app for, putting out social media content. It's combined everything. It's really an ecosystem. I think that's the biggest difference I've seen from comparing Western social media and Chinese social media.
So Natalie, you know, I was very interested in this one slide that you showed during a recent webinar that you did about e-commerce. And maybe we can also share that with listeners. The one where it's all in Chinese, where you mention, you know, Taobao. There are like three levels of e-commerce, right? Taobao, JD, Pinduoduo, Dangdang, Suining, One Store. This is all translated from LAN just now. Then the second level is the Tmall, VIP, Alibaba, and the platform only for Shishuan, 1919, etc. And then, of course, the highly specialized, dedicated to wine is Wine World, Yes My Wine, Weiju. Can you just break that up for us quickly?
Yeah, for sure. Because in China, you know, e-commerce so developed. I think, you know, that I think the last number I checked was around 710 million online shoppers in China. So just to put it in perspective, that's roughly the population of Europe combined. So imagine that amount, you know, that number of people using online. And then, of course, there's several different tiers and categories of e-commerce as well. The ones that we mentioned, you know, like Tmall, JD.com, those are e-commerce platforms that sell everything, anything, you know, from electronics, food, grocery, anything you can imagine, you can find it.
So that's like something equivalent to, let's say, you know, Amazon, eBay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's basically equivalent of Amazon. And then underneath that tier, you have drinks specialized e-commerce platforms like Ijo, 1919.
Right.
They sell all sorts of, you know, alcoholic beverages from Baijiu, the Chinese spirit, to beer, to wine, to Huangjiu, Chinese yellow wine, or to soft drinks. They cover the whole range for drinks.
And as I recall, 1919, it's an interesting story because they started out with the brick and mortar retail shops.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I met the founders, and, you know, they at the time they only had 1,000, but I don't know what the status is now. In fact, some of the huge brands who are popular are because they were able to get through these retail shops.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think 1919 pioneered this model for a lot of drinks retailers to combine offline shops and online shops. And they were very successful in that aspect. And they're the first ones, and contrary to a lot of drinks retailers, they're also the first ones to start from lower tier cities. Their home base till today is still in Chengdu, which
right.
is the first tier city like Shanghai or Beijing. They started out in Chengdu, expanded gradually to second tier, third tier, and then come back to first tier cities like Shanghai and Beijing. So their strategy is completely different, which is probably why it made them quite successful.
So, I mean, there are so many main players, right? Like where do you start? Like if Italian wine producers wanted to sell their wine through all this spectrum of e-commerce platforms, where do they start? Where is the starting point for them?
I think for them, first thing they need to do is to ask their Chinese partners, what are the available platforms their Chinese partner is on? So start.
When you mean Chinese partners, do you mean the importers,
yeah.
the distributors? What do you mean?
You're right. So when I say Chinese partner, is their importer or distributor in China. So talk to them and ask them what are the platforms they are on. Because for a Italian winery, for instance, to open a wine shop in Taobao, that's basically impossible because you have to have a Chinese business registration, a mobile number, bank account tied to it. It's quite complicated. It's not impossible, but it's just very complicated. So if your importer in China already has its own platform or opened a flagship store on Taobao or JD.com, work with them to sell that and to, you know, promote your wines there. And also ask your importer, what's the price range people are comfortable paying? What's the best, what are the items that's moving fast online? So start from there to understand what customers are looking for and what customers are eventually ended up paying for, and then promote that sort of price category wines, I think.
Right. And not to mention the obvious, it's the elephant in the room, but, you have to speak Chinese, right? You have to be, and that's, it seems like it's so obvious,
I know,
you know,
yeah.
in your face kind of fact, but you have to speak Chinese.
You're absolutely
right.
I think, for me, because, I'm too deep into this and I forgot about those, obvious things, but you're absolutely right. You have to speak Chinese or hire someone who speaks Chinese or understand Chinese and, get your basic information, winery bio and everything else translated into Chinese so that your importers, distributors can use and open a WeChat account because eventually people are looking at your WeChat as your name card and to see what's your brand story, what are the things you're offering on WeChat as well.
Yeah, I think WeChat also, is coming to its glory in its all sense, because now with the social distancing, you don't want to, because, the Italians, they're always like baci baci, abbracci, hug and kisses. And with WeChat, you don't even have to touch anybody ever again or handshake. Right, so I think it's really this app for of the times
for the pandemic.
Yeah, listen. So I'm assuming that during COVID, selling direct to consumer has increased, right, in terms of wine sales. What kind have you got any inkling as to what kind of wines performing better or worse, or price points, any of that?
We don't have official data on this, but my impression is that, wines, lower end wines tend to do well in China.
What are the lower end price points?
I think around 100 RMB.
And that translates into
$12. Yeah.
Okay.
And that tends to do well. And also because, you know, during the pandemic, it's the economic downturn as well. So people are very cautious about spending. No one is really splurging like before COVID, like they did before COVID. So people are more conscious about what they're spending on and how they're spending the money as well.
So I don't mean to put you on a spot, but like if it's $12 to the consumer, what is that Excella? Like, have you got any idea? Len, have you got any idea?
It should be $3-4.
So Len says, who's sitting right next to me, $3-4.
Yeah.
So it's still, you know, that is very inexpensive.
Yeah, it is very inexpensive. I mean, the wine sold in China, like if you go to JD.com or Tmall, take a look at the wine section and you'll see a lot of the wines are priced very, very cheap. Yeah, I think that's one thing people don't tend to understand. I even did a story, just a couple of days ago about
What is the story?
So the story was really about, you know, because now in China, there's a massive campaign to urge Chinese to drink Chinese wine. So, and when I was doing the story and I was looked back to a report published by China's drinks organization, I think in 2011, and it says roughly about 80% of Chinese wines sold in China are priced below 100 RMB, which is $12, and roughly 38% of those wines are priced between 20 RMB and 50 RMB. That's like what, less than $5.
You know, but I'm completely for having the Chinese consumers drink Chinese wine because, you know, I often hear from, at least from my side, Italian wine producers, you know, they're kind of, they're always, they feel threatened by this fact. But I always tell them, you know, look at America, you know, Americans did not drink wine until they started drinking their own wine. And still today, perhaps it's not clear to them that 60% of the wine consumption in America are still American wines.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then once they become more familiar and they get exposed to wine in general, when there is a wine knowledge, then they can try different things like imported wines and different price points.
Oh, yeah, for
so
sure.
I completely welcome the fact that, you know, they are encouraging Chinese wine consumption. I think that is absolutely going to be good for everybody in terms of wine market.
Yeah, I think it is a good thing, especially China is so big and you are seeing more quality-driven wines from Ningxia or from Shandong coming out of the market. I think it's a good thing to elevate the quality of the wines so that consumers can buy and drink Chinese wine. One thing that worries me is when it's tinged with nationalism or xenophobia. Like,
right.
That's one thing that worries me, but it is something we're definitely seeing happening right now. So we'll see where it leads us.
It's interesting time for everybody right now. So we'll see where, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen 2021 if we ever get to that, right? So listen, let's go back to talking a little bit about live streaming.
Yeah.
How does this live streaming take place, through which platform? And do you have any, other than Penfolds, of course, can you give us a quick overview as to what live streaming platforms there are, and if there are any brands who were particularly successful? And I know they use also, this is a twofold question. In China, the Chinese are the only ones who talk about KOL. What does that mean? What does that stand for?
Yeah, definitely. I think live streaming is like e-commerce on steroids, it just suddenly exploded. I mean, it came onto the scene roughly 2 or 3 years ago, but during the pandemic, it's just, you know, acted like a catalyst for live streaming. Everyone that I know in the wine trade in China is suddenly using live streaming to sell wines because, you know, with the lockdown and quarantine measures in place. And the popular platforms for live streaming is still linked to e-commerce, like Tmall and JD.com, two of the biggest e-commerce platforms in China that account for roughly 80% of the market share. So you have online influencers or this KOL, key opinion leaders, like...
Right, but we just call them influencers, right?
Yeah. Influencers, basically,
but they are key opinion leaders.
Yeah, like Li Jiaqi. I don't know if you heard about him. He's known as the lipstick king.
Right, he's the kid who sold like squillions of lipsticks, right, in 1 nanosecond.
Yeah, that's the one. So he's the one who got famous in China like 3 years ago because he was so good at selling lipsticks. And, you know, he sold, if I remembered correctly, he sold roughly 15,000 lipsticks within 5 minutes. No, it's just, I mean, that's still.
But he sells other stuff, not just lipstick, right?
Absolutely. He branched out to basically selling anything like home appliance, frying pan, anything.
But does he sell any wine?
Oh yeah, that too. And he worked with Great Wall, and Great Wall,
right,
a Chinese state-owned winery, the second biggest winery in China, actually. He worked with him in January, actually, just this year, before Chinese Spring Festival. And he managed to sell 20,000 cases of wine within 30 seconds.
Wow, that's pretty impressive for especially China. Who are the KOLs kind of like specialized in wine? Lady Penguin, Terry Xu.
Yeah, I think those are the two KOLs, influencers that I can think of, are specialized in wine. The other sort of, they do a little bit of everything. Yeah, but Lady Penguin is the one that sort of stands out. She's quite influential.
So listen, like how does the, to engage a KOL, who pays for them?
Well, wineries, I think.
So the wineries pay, it's like hiring an influencer. It's just the influencer marketing model,
yeah,
right?
Influencer marketing. Think about it. I mean, if you are in the US, you are a brand owner, luxury brand owner, you want to have Kim Kardashian or some celebrities come over to you, there's a certain rate cut, and then you pay them, you sort out the details. I know some wine associations worked with them, and a few wineries they did as well.
I mean, I think Lady Penguin is quite successful with her own brands, but can they actually also, in your opinion, are they capable of selling other brands?
It's a little bit challenging. I think Lady Penguin is known for wine and other alcoholic beverages. For her to branch out to other things, I don't know. It's a big question mark.
I mean, I think that's just in general, right? Not just in China, but what is the conversion rate of these influencers, especially for wine, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I think anyone who comes up with that study will be a bestseller for the wine market.
Oh, yeah.
So listen, I know you're not Nostradamus, unless you have a secret, but what, in your opinion, what does future hold for China? What will be the new norm, quote unquote, for the wine business in China after the lockdown being eased a bit?
Well, I think, online shopping is definitely going to stay. Because I think a lot of people, even during the lockdown, the amazing thing about the pandemic is, you know, it changed a lot of people's shopping habits. I think I read some figures a couple of days ago. A lot of first-time shoppers were converted into the virtual world during the lockdown, just in the first month, in February. So that's quite amazing. A lot of the frequent online shoppers already, you know, increased their frequency shopping online. So I think that's going to stay. Of course, there are some people after the lockdown measures were lifted, and then they were going to say, well, I'm going to go back to brick and mortar shopping, which is fine. But then certainly there's going to be a certain group of people who got used to online shopping and say, well, this is not too bad. I'm going to stick with online shopping. So I think we're going to see more of that.
So, I think both of us and many people in the wine world, we used to travel quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now that, you know, it will definitely affect tourism as well as wine tourism. After the collapse of tourist economy, it will definitely affect the hospitality, right? Hotels, restaurants, and all the different services related to this business, which is very important for the wine business. I mean, in America alone, there are 40 million people without a job right now. So once the travel ban is lifted or partially lifted, what is the what do you think is the efficacy? How does the contact tracing app work for you right now? Do you have that in Hong Kong and in China? How can you travel easily in and out?
At the moment in Hong Kong, we actually don't have that. But I think in China, they already developed a contact tracing app. If it's green and you can travel to different places, that means you're virus free. But if it's red, you sort of have to go into quarantine. But unfortunately, at the moment in Hong Kong, we still can't go anywhere. And the border is closed, at least until July. International travels is still banned until September. So we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, I think social distancing is going to persist unless we find a workable and viable vaccine solution for the whole population. Otherwise, still people are going to be very cautious dining out, going out as well.
So if you can give us kind of, you know, as we approach, you know, this the new kind of post-COVID era, hopefully. I don't want to really jinx ourselves, but if you can recommend like three things or like key takeaways, what would that be for dedicated to the Italian wine producers as we approach the second half of 2020? And this is my last question for you.
I think if they don't know anything about Chinese social media right now, and I will highly recommend them to get themselves acquainted with the like apps like WeChat and start to play with it just to understand how it works. And also work with your importers and distributors to build up your online presence. If you already have an online presence, expand your online presence. I mean, this is a best time to do that as everyone is going digital. And also, you know, I think China, because it is the first country to be hit by the coronavirus, and it is definitely among the
second.
Yeah, and it definitely...
Not that it's a competition.
Yeah, not that it's a competition. But what I'm saying is, you know, because it's hit first and it's going to be among the first to recover as well. And certainly we're seeing that right now in China. So fingers crossed, hopefully it will be like that. And mark down a few key trade fairs that they want to attend in the second half of the year. So plan for that already. Because I think the fairs that are happening mostly are in November, like Wine to Asia, organized by Vin Italy, of course, and then Pro Wine. Yeah. So mark down those fairs you want to attend to draw out Chinese buyers, because by then people already depleted the old stocks and they are in the position to purchase and buy for next year and the upcoming Chinese New Year. So that's the best time to do business in China. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
So do you think, like, I mean, have you been to, I knew I said it was the last question, but one last question. You're now in Hong Kong. Have you kind of resumed your normal life? Like, are you going to the restaurants? Are you wearing
Yeah. In Hong Kong, I mean, it's completely, I think we're out of woods, but still the government is very cautious. Just this week, starting from today, actually, so I'm very excited. Everyone is allowed to have group gatherings indoors and outdoor activities. Number is increased to 50. Restaurants are allowed to operate at full capacity. And everything just loosened up starting from today. So that's a very good thing. And things are getting back to normal. In fact, I just read an article from South China Morning Post today, this morning, and it says restaurants are now hard to make bookings because everything is full, everything is packed.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic news.
Really good news.
It's a little bit slower here, but in Italy, because I went to a real restaurant, couple of restaurants last week for the first time. I've been mostly ordering in from delivery, but let's cross fingers. And Natalie, listen, thank you so much for this. And I think I would highly recommend, again, everybody to go vino-joy.com website because it's loaded with the latest update in China's wine market. So Natalie, I know you're a busy lady. Thank you so much. And listen, I hope to get you here for Wine to Wine in the fall, in November.
Oh, yeah, definitely love to.
Okay. I mean, if we can't get you physically because, you know, for some reason, at least, you know, we'll do like a virtual conferencing, a webinar or something. Okay?
Love to.
Okay. Alrighty. Ciao, ciao. Grazie mille. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.